This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. We appreciate you guys spending part of your week with us each and every week when we have one of these recordings. Today is a pretty cool episode that I have a feeling that our audience is going to really resonate with, because we've got co-founders of a product company that also are restaurateurs and bar owners, and I'm pretty excited for Don and William to share a little bit of their story and how they got to where they are. But I'm actually going to pass the mic over to them. Why don't you get started, Don, and then William, you can introduce yourself. But they're the co-founders of Craft Standard, which I'll let them tell you a little bit more about what that is and kind of how they got into this world, and then we'll talk a little bit about why they did what they did.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeremy. So I'm Don Ray, co-founder of Craft Standard. We're a draft cocktail company. The story really starts back about 7 years ago in one of our bars. We're in Northwest Arkansas, which is it's an SEC town. University of Arkansas is here, and we own a bar location that's a pretty large footprint. It's probably about 6,000 square feet. And we kind of started dabbling in batch cocktails and trying to come up with a really solid batch cocktail solution, which led us to Cornelius kegs, which led us to a lot of really cool things that happened and able to achieve some of the goals that we were trying to achieve with that batch cocktail solution. But it also created problems for us that William and I put our heads together to try to come up with solutions to fix the issues and make our lives easier. So that's kind of like the general overarching, you know, idea behind this. We have been in the restaurant business for 20 years, restaurant mm-hmm. business, own barbecue restaurants, multiple bar locations, whether it be dance clubs or pubs. And then we kind of landed on tiki and like craft cocktail per se bars. And it's just been a journey of trial and error and trying to achieve, you know, maximum efficiencies and margins. So, and that's what leads us to Craft Standard.
Very cool. Very cool. William, I know he took a lot of that from you, but why don't you introduce yourself to the audience? Who are you and what do you get to do with Craft Standard? Because I'm watching you guys on video, but everybody else isn't going to have that privilege to know that that you're brothers and happen to be twins, because we're only going to be posting audio when this goes out to market.
Yeah, I'm William. I'm Don's brother, basically, and co-founder of Craft Standard. I invented the way for us to get into the keg. So we're using a one-use keg that hooks up to a standard Sankey D adapter for draft beer systems. What makes us so unique is that no one has to purchase any new infrastructure to use our product. So, you know, 99% of places in the country that are draft beer are going to be using the Sankey D coupler. That coupler attaches to our keg. What we're selling is a mix that's in the keg with space left in the keg that allows you to add your particular mix of spirits into the keg through the spiker device that we invented to allow us to the customer to have a unique cocktail, essentially, basically using our mix. Pop the spiker on, fill it up with up to 9 liters of spirit or, you know, juice or cordials or whatever it is that suits your fancy. Pop it off, shake the keg up. It only has to be shook one time. Hooks up to your standard Sankey D system, and now you're pouring draft cocktails. Ultimate speed, consistency, control. You know, those are really the hallmarks behind, you know, what this product is about. Don, really?
Yeah. Well, and sorry to cut you off, but I'm just thinking, you know, I talk with you guys pre-show, and it's like it's such a unique idea that you guys have, because I think as I think back about kind of just the cocktail business in general, I'm sure, you know, kind of you're scratching your own itch, as there's probably even in your own bars, you could go to the same bartender and have the same drink three nights in a row and have it taste very different. Is that kind of where, you know, tell me a little bit about the inception of where it even came from, because you guys are so far down the road and I love that you guys are excited about the product and I want to talk more about it, but I'd love to figure out what, like, tell me what problem you guys were trying to solve that is such a, you know, it's a unique area. I love where you guys went with it. And I really, really think it's going to be something that when people hear this, they're going to be like, how do I get this tomorrow? But what was the main, you know, itch that you guys were trying to scratch within even your own business?
Well, that's a great question. Don actually touched on the size of our properties. So the whole handcrafted cocktail revolution, if you will, occurred 5-6 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, even.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the craft cocktail revolution, if you will. So we opened a bar called Ben's Apartment, which is this private members only speakeasy bar behind the two main bars that sit on the main drag on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. And we were doing the handcrafted cocktails, you know, the specialty cocktails and all that. And it went off so well and the customers loved it. And the cocktails are phenomenal, you know, and yada, yada, yada. We had a dance club sitting out front of this bar, of the bar that we're in right now, which is Ben's. And we wanted to change the concept because a dance club, they have a lifespan. You know, you're talking about 3 or 4 years, right? 5 years at max. And so what we did is we did a public version of this essentially out front on half of the dance club. So one half still stayed a dance club and the other side turns into this craft cocktail bar. Well, it's roughly 2,000, 3,000 square feet, 2,500 square feet, which is pretty large for a handcrafted cocktail bar. The reaction we got from the customer, the consumer, was phenomenal. The kids loved it. The adults loved it. You know, we were brushing with a broad stroke. People were coming in droves. But the problem that we were running into is that we were trying to make Moscow mules and old fashions and all of this stuff. And it takes a lot of time to make them correctly. That was the problem we were trying to solve. It was keeping Don up at night. I was, to be honest with you, not even thinking about it because I was thinking about other things. But it kept Don up at night. And one day he comes to me and he goes, I think I figured this out. And he was thinking about the homebrew guys. How are they homebrewing their own beer and putting it in kegs and serving it in their house? What was this certain keg that they were using to be able to do this in? And could we get those kegs and figure out how to batch cocktails and put them in those kegs ourselves? And once he found the keg and how we would hook it up to our existing draft system, we put our heads together and started batching cocktails to try to accomplish this. And we came up with our first batch and it was Moscow Mule. And I think how many kegs did we do, Don?
Two.
We did two kegs. Once we landed on the recipe that we liked, we did two kegs in it and we flew through them in, 45 minutes we flew through.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't even enough. So from there, we started to expand that and we started taking draft beer off the lines. Until we took all the lines over in that one room, which was, I think, 8 or 10 taps, and put all these unique draft cocktails. We looked at our P-Mix on our system, and we were seeing what we were selling the most of, and we just started replacing them with the draft cocktails in the Cornelius kegs. And they sold like crazy. We started doing large format. You know, the customers were not unhappy anymore. We were able to service the people three deep that wanted a big drink or something not as sophisticated as an old fashioned or something like that. And it gave the bartenders the opportunity to really make those handcrafted specialty cocktails, but also give the customer a cocktail that would be considered handcrafted, but is not as complicated as some of the other ones through our draft system. Through this process, though, with the big win that we had, we created another problem. We had switched all of our draft lines, even in the dance club, over to these draft cocktails. And what we found is we were spending entire days, 8-hour working shifts, building kegs for just the weekend. And in some cases, we couldn't even make it through the weekend. We would have to spend two entire days building kegs.
Oh, wow.
To make it through the weekends. And that's when we started really talking about, if this works so well for us, how do we commercialize this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's when that story started to take shape.
Yeah, so you have to think, you know, this is Don jumping in. I know our voices are really similar, but, you know, so we go from a 2-keg build all the way up to 20 lines. So essentially we have 10 different cocktails on 2 lines each. And now we've gone from building 20 kegs to building 60 to 70 kegs a week.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sourcing sugar, that's sourcing juice, that's building syrups, that's, you know, at the time, you know, we were really hardcore and we were squeezing juice ourselves with juicers, our whole team. You know, we had gone down this path. We're making syrups in-house, infusions, you know, like we were really driven towards this craft cocktail mindset, even in our kegs. Mm-hmm. Well, the labor piece of that and the cleaning and the sourcing and, you know, just cleaning of kegs, Cornelius keg cleaning is very difficult.
Yeah, for those that are unfamiliar with what a Cornelius keg is versus what they might have seen at a fraternity party the last time they actually had to carry a keg, if they're not a restaurant operator or a bartender. I mean, and I'm familiar with it and I've seen them. But for those in our audience that might be the tech geeks that are like, I just want my beer, I just want my IPA, leave me alone, or I want my cracked cocktail, explain what the difference is between a Cornelius keg, a standard keg, just kind of all of that to give those that may not be familiar with it a little bit of a visual, because I do think it helps people understand and get to the place that they may be able to understand why you guys did what you did.
Okay. A Cornelius keg is a six barrel that you can actually open. And what they were originally used for was back in the day in the 80s and 90s and 70s, probably the Coke companies and Pepsi companies, they put their syrup in those, and those cylinders are what ran those Coke systems. So your fountain Cokes and your guns came off of those. So they have this oval opening that they were able to open and refill and clean and refill. And then the homebrew guys started using those cylinders to put their homebrew in and modify so they would work on a draft system. So once I kind of tracked that down, I got our hands on those and we started using them to batch these cocktails in. So we'd batch the cocktails in a large Lexan, pour it into it's a 5 gallon batch per keg, and then we'd hook that up to our draft lines. The issue is when you're done with it, you know, you got sugar and juice and all these things in this, they separate, they have to be shaken regularly. You know, it's a laborious process in the grand scheme of things. You pull this thing off and you have to clean these kegs out like really, really well before you build another batch. You know, you don't want to, there's all kinds of contamination issues and stuff because you're opening a product and things like that. So, you know, like William said, we solved one problem and it was great for our bartenders. We're able to up level our sales. Our margins are awesome, you know, XYZ, but we create this huge laborious situation on the other end where we're like paying a bunch of labor to build all this out. And then the minute that he and I go on vacation, it just goes off the rails because these kids that work for us, they're not paying attention to like perfect measurements of alcohol and sugar and different things to build these kegs. So, you know, it just became a headache for us. We were like, man, we created a monster here, and how are we going to get on the other side of this? You know?
Well, and the couple things that I took from your story that I think are so amazing is just even the transfer of the beer and the amount of kegs that you guys had in beer, and how even you guys were able to, you know, and I think, you know, margins are good across the board, but it's just amazing to me that you guys were able to transfer even your guys' not only existing equipment, but just that the spend and the you know, the consumer was buying those craft cocktails even more so than beer, especially in a town, you know, in a college town where, you know, I would assume that beer sales are still relatively high in your guys' establishments as well.
You know, beer does well. You know, we've really transitioned people over to spirit, and spirit in the grand scheme of things is taking the lead. You know, beer is on the decline nationally.
Interesting.
You know, and spirit is growing. You know, college kid, they want to get lit
fast. Yeah. Right? They want to get drunk as fast as they can.
They're going to get in those. And the thing is we weren't building, we don't have keg. Our draft cocktails weren't these like really weird esoteric drinks. I mean, we're talking about
Moscow mules and
margaritas. You know what I mean? Moscow mules, hurricanes, like very recognizable drinks that these people see. So, you know, that built on a high level though.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Clearly the product itself, you're not going to, you know, you're not going and Don, and I know you and I were talking about this the other day. It's like the, you know, the first thing when I heard your guys' story that I was thinking about was those freaking frozen margarita machines that are sitting there mixing them, you know, and like, that's the first thing that came to mind. I'm like, well, it's got to be something more than that, which is why I'm digging into this, because I think a lot of people think of pre-mixed drinks and they see the daiquiri machines and the margarita machines down at the beach and they're like, oh, that's what I got. And I know that's not anywhere close to, which is why I keep peeling back the onion to make sure that our audience can understand not only the how, but the why.
Yeah. So the foundation of this is natural juice, cane mm-hmm. sugar, filtered water. And that is our ingredient base in our kegs, you know, yep. and we stick to that. Like, we're not using acids and, you know, all kinds of non-natural type flavor components. So, you know, granted it's a large format, it's a batch, but you know, you can make this as high end as you want, or you can make it as low end as you want, depending on what spirit you put in. That's the beautiful thing about this, is it's an open source product. You know, yep. you get to put your fingerprint on it and you get to create, you know, whatever your flavor is that you're looking for.
So let me peel it back a little bit from a experience and education perspective. Like, it sounds like you almost had to have an engineering degree to figure out how to get all of those. I mean, you know, and so do either one of you guys have any kind of formal education in either batch food service or, you know, kind of, or was it just a necessity thing? Like, it's just such a cool story to say, I have a problem and I'm gonna go figure it out. But to me, it almost feels like an engineer should have figured it out, or somebody at Anheuser-Busch, or, you know, somewhere up the line. And I love the story just because it's so cool to me. And, you know, I know you guys are chuckling a little bit, but it's just, to me, I think about it and I'm like, dude, this is awesome that these guys figured this out. So tell me, I mean, where is it? Is it really just the fact that you guys were running bars and saying, there's got to be a better way, there's got to be an easier way?
Well, I mean, that's where it starts. I mean, you have to think that we became super drink nerds. Right. So we're digging into all kinds of different syrup type builds, sherbets, all kinds of infusions. You know, we're using refractometers to measure our bricks so that our menus are bricked out a certain way, because we have a belief system that there's a specific range of sweet and acid that is very, you know, palatable. And you know what I mean? We're like digging into all, you know, the Death and Co's of the world and the PDTs and reading all these books. And so we kind of self-educated ourselves into a belief system. And then we just kind of carried that forward. You know, mm-hmm. William is a tinkerer by trade, first of all. Like, I mean,
I love it.
We built ourselves with our own hands, and, you know, he has a construction and a spatial kind of mind. So he just sees things, and he just screwed around with this stuff until he figured out a way around it. You know, there was legal hurdles that limited our ability to do kegged cocktails the other way. Like, initially we went down the path of, oh, we'll just put vodka in a mule keg and we'll ship it all mm-hmm. over the country. You know what I mean? We were naive. And we start yep. studying the TTB laws and like really understanding that we can't do those things. So every turn kind of forced us down a path to learn something, you know, mm-hmm. with William, like we were working on the spiker and he finds this engineer at the university who studies liquid dynamics, and he's meeting with him, and William's working through all of this stuff with him. And the guy is like, are you an engineer? He's like, you know more about this than I do. This is insane. You know? So it's really out of necessity that we learned the different things that we learned. You know, I mean, I built a spreadsheet program in Excel that you could tell me the recipe of your cocktail that you like the best, and I'll plug it in there and it'll tell me how to put it into a keg. It's all
that's crazy.
Math, you know what I mean? But based on our foundational beliefs, we created a program that kind of finishes that. And then we start working with we find a food scientist friend, and we start working with him and passing on our recipes and things like that. And then he was able to turn them into major batch sizes so that co-packers and mm-hmm. things use. But his response back to us is a lot like what yours is. I mean, he was like, how did you land on these flavor profiles? Because when I taste these, they're delicious. It's like the best thing I've ever had. Like, it's insane, you know? And really what it comes down to is us being like bar nerds that have worked behind the stick and just know what good tasting things are, and use the feedback from our customers to dial things in. You know, these big bureaucratic companies and stuff, they just can't get to the people like we can.
Yeah. They're not agile enough to figure it out.
We keep it very, very simple. And, mm-hmm. and I think that's a big key to the reason our things taste the way they have and all that. And that's not to say that they were perfect out of the gates, right? Like,
yeah,
like there's been some modifications even as of late, just based on some feedback from the consumers and things like that. But we're small enough still that we can be flexible, right? And the mixes are very simple, so making a change to them is easily done also.
Well, and Don was just saying, William, just a second ago that, you know, you guys hired, you know, or you guys found a food scientist. And, you know, I know at least in the restaurant trade, when you talk about it and you guys make food there, so you guys will understand this is, you know, doing a double sized batch of ranch dressing doesn't just mean you do 2x of everything that's there. And I think people think I'm going to do a craft cocktail and it's going to be, you know, an ounce of this and, you know, and a half an ounce of that and all of these things. But when you batch it up, it's not exactly, you know, a 5-to-1 or a 10 to, you know, if I'm doing 10x, you have to tinker with that stuff, because if not, it's not going to taste the same as when you shrink it down. Even when I'm making, you know, waffles in my own kitchen, mm-hmm. when I'm doubling the batch of waffles that's on the package, it doesn't function the exact same as 2x what, you know, the 1x recipe is.
Yeah, and that goes all the way back to from the very beginning when we start talking about the 2 kegs that we made in the Moscow Mules. We threw away a bunch of batches of that. Uh-huh. We were trying to figure out, why can we not get this to be the way we want it? And then we reversed back and we went, let's think about every single step when you make a Moscow Mule, what happens mm-hmm. in that drink? And we go through all the steps, and then the light bulb came on. There's one thing that occurs that most people don't take into account. And I don't know if I'm allowed to say it or not, but I guess I will, because we're way down the road.
Dilution. Yeah, try and catch you, right?
Ice.
Try
and catch you. Ice turns into water. It changes uh-huh. the flavor of the drink.
Yep.
That had to be taken into account in your batch, because what yep. happens is you've got it in this batch form. It's coming out of the tap cold over ice. You don't have ice melt initially, right?
Yeah.
So that yep. was like an
yeah. You had to mute or increase the certain flavor profiles. I love just kind of all of the different ways that you guys have gone about it. I guess you guys have talked about, you know, kind of your tinkering, your learnings. What's been your biggest learning, you know, as you guys have gone about these things? Because whether it's the ABC laws and, you know, the alcohol kind of way, where putting Tito's in versus Stoli vodka in is probably going to make the drink taste different. And does that cause, you know, something? The fresh ingredients and spoilage and usage, like, have you guys had any problems with any of that where the keg, you know, is, you know, figuring out the day dots like you guys would in your walk-ins? Like, you know, tell me a little bit about kind of where you guys have had to pivot in pretty significant ways. Is there one or two things that you guys go, if I hadn't figured out this whole thing could have come crashing down?
I mean, I think some of the issues that we have every once in a while, I mean, the kegs themselves are not perfect.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, they're not consistent.
You have structural failures sometimes. And if oxygen gets to it, you know, you have spoilage. It's very rare that that happens, you know, or it doesn't hold pressure and it won't pour correctly or something like that. We've had some kegs that have those kinds of issues where they're just broken, essentially.
Yeah, probably not a whole lot different than your beer that gets distributed to you guys, I would guess.
Yeah. I mean, if they get dropped or something like that, some sort of damage occurs. I'm not sure that there's been anything that has, like, I mean, there's been some aha moments that we're in the middle of shifting to, possibly. You know, there is some learnings. As easy as this is, there's still some difficulties. You know, our size format, for one, we're in a 30-liter keg. I think we're going to, mm-hmm. we would like to shift to a 19-liter keg. We'd like the entry for the customer to be a little bit cheaper. You know, the amount of spirit that they have to put in the keg, they have to spend less on the number of bottles they put in it. You know, the keg size fits better in standard refrigeration as opposed to a 30, which is the size we want to go to is basically a 6-barrel, which is uh-huh. standard. The 30 is like this oddball size. But when we've started out, it was about price, right? It costs us almost the same to put the keg itself, the structure of the keg shell costs about $1 difference between a 30 and an 18.
Wow.
And we were trying to give the consumer a good price, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have any money, to be honest with you, in the very beginning. We were bootstrapping like crazy. So we wanted to get into a certain price per ounce. So we had to go with a 30-liter keg to do that. And just the learnings that we've had in this past year with that is making us rethink some things.
you know, to improve the product and, you know, help the consumer, make it easier. You know, a 30 liter keg weighs more than a 19 liter keg. The number of bottles you have to put in it is a lot more. The combination of things would be a lot more in a 30 liter keg. There'd be a lot less combinations in the smaller keg, you know, just things like that. You know, I think we're going to simplify, you know, we came out of the gates making a keg that you can adjust the ABV and you can do all these neat little things too, but it can get complicated. Whereas if we went to a 19 and kind of eliminated some of those bells and whistles, and just kind of,
you don't have to be a bar geek to run it. It sounds like,
exactly.
You know, which I'm teasing exactly. Because you guys have called yourself bar geeks, but at the end of the day, you've got to democratize it and make it a little bit simpler for these guys to be able to deploy
the
it.
The accounts that we're finding this going is not the bar nerd accounts. We're finding it in these really high volume sports venues and music venues and things like that. And, and even the middle range, large venue, you know, on the party streets and all of that. And the more simple we make it, the more standardized we make it for them, the easier it's going to be and, you know, to flow through and for them to sell it and then build it and hook it up to the line and all of that.
Yeah, it gets, so why don't we walk through that process then? So now I've heard your guys' story. I'm like, I need Moscow Mules on my tap. I need, you know, whatever it is that you guys have got. I've got, you know, old fashions. I need them. What do I need to do as a bar owner? I'm down on 6th Street in Austin, and I want to figure out how to make this go. What does that look like for a bar owner, bar operator, somebody that's engaging and saying, you know what, this sounds awesome. Having a guy sit there and take 6, 7, 8 minutes to make a drink when I'm 3 deep at the bar is not acceptable anymore. I can drive an extra 30, 40, 50% more volume by doing this for those standard drinks that you guys talked about. What does that look like? What does the engagement look like? What do they need to do for the equipment in the place? What do they need to do for, you know, talk to me a little bit about what's the starting place and where do they keep going from there?
Okay. Well, we're distributed through the Anheuser-Busch network, pretty much nationwide, every major city. Mm-hmm. So Brown Distributing in Austin would be your wholesaler that you'd contact. They carry our product. As far as equipment, there is no equipment needs. So what you do is you select which beer line you want to take the beer off, make sure that line is clean. Usually the wholesaler will do that for you. You order the flavor of keg that you would like. We've got margarita, which is a margarita sour base, mule, lemon, pink lemonade, Paloma, mojito. They deliver the keg. They deliver what's called the spiker to you in a tap handle, just like beer. You get they'll give you a recipe card on how to make different drinks that go in the keg. They're trained on how those things work. And you attach the spiker to the keg and you put the combination of the spirit that you would like in the keg to create your cocktail, whether it be a margarita with the margarita keg, or a Long Island with the margarita keg, or a gin gimlet, or a whiskey sour, all of the above. It's a sour, so you can create whatever you'd like. You hook it up, you know, you put the 9 liters in, takes about 3 minutes max to do that. Pick the keg up, shake it back and forth for 15 to 20 seconds, make sure it's mixed really well, slide it into the refrigerator and put the Sankey on top, and you're pouring draft cocktails in about 3 to 4 minutes.
That's incredible. And no new equipment, no lines needing to get run. No, I mean, this is the part that I'm still, and I know you guys were teasing about it earlier about these other guys that you would engage, but I'm like, it seems so simple. Like it feels like it should have been done before. And I love that you guys are here to tell the story, but
that it wasn't done before. I'll be honest with you. Like when we went down this rabbit hole, you know, and we searched and searched and searched to see if somebody had done it, because it just, when the light bulb went off with him, with William, when he figured it out, he was just he's like, I don't understand how nobody figured this out. And also, like, we went up to St. Louis because we were vetted by Anheuser-Busch. They put us through the paces. So I met with the head of draft beer. His name's Tony Barra. And, you know, he put me through the paces. We spiked kegs. We hooked it up to their system. They kept the kegs online for over, you know, a couple months, just testing the product and making sure that it wasn't staining lines and it wasn't separating in the keg and all those types of things. And he gets back with me on the phone. He's like, man, he's like, I got to congratulate you. He goes, this is the biggest step in beverage in 50 years.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. It sounds amazing.
You know, they were surprised that they didn't figure it out.
Well, and I'll tell you guys a quick funny story, and this will probably resonate with you guys. We had We had a 3-day festival concert that we had done point of sale technology for probably 10, 12 years ago. And it was one of the first times they'd had this festival. Not going to mention the city because it'll give away the festival that it was. And by day three, they had run out of mix. And so all of these drunk people are showing up to these concerts and they've got just these 50-gallon trash cans, and they're just pouring bottles of whatever alcohol they had left and mixing it up and like just scooping in cups and giving to people. And you know, not only unsanitary, but just, I mean, I think of that. And I think even quite frankly, I mean, my wife and I were out at an event and she went to two different bars and got two different, I mean, she got the same Paloma, but it tasted so different. Mm-hmm. And so I think even as a consumer, I think about that, you know, part of what helps restaurants, you know, build a brand and build consistency, or why you go back to that same bartender, is you know he's going to take care of you. It feels like you guys are trying, you know, or have already figured out a way to solve some portion of this. Is that a fair assessment?
I mean, you know, in this industry right now, it's a revolving door. First of all, people are struggling to hire bartenders, trained staff. COVID really hurt the industry, and the guys that have been around for a long time left and got into different industries. So You're dealing with a very rookie base of people who don't, they're not, I mean, and it's not everywhere. I mean, you have your places that still have good, solid guys, but for the most part, you know, guys and gals, for the most part, you know, there's a major turnover shift that's happening and we're having to retrain. I mean, we're doing it in our places right now. And the thing is you can set the ABV on this deal. Like, yep. You want the ABV to be 12%, you know, you put 9 liters in it. You want it to be 8, you put 7 liters in it and 2 liters of water, you know, and then you put that on your menu. This is what the ABV is of the drink, just like beer. And the customer gets that consistency every single time. But you're making it easy on your bartender too, because your bartender doesn't have to be super proficient and perfect at making the cocktail every time.
Well, and I can imagine it also helps quite a bit with, you know, with overpours and underpours and things like that, because now everything's mixed. And I know you guys, you know, have been running bars for a number of years. The waste and or people stealing, you know, alcohol, you know, to give to their friends and whatnot is a big part. And then you take into the fact that everybody's, you know, I'm a veteran and I've been here for 6 weeks, you know, behind the bar kind of thing. You know, I read a book and I went to bartender class and now I'm the most senior guy behind the bar. You know, those kind of things happen.
Yeah. Average loss on an open bottle of liquor behind a bar is 25%. That's national average. Bevanco.
Holy smokes.
Is the, yep. You know, the, yep. The inventory management company, they'll tell you that that's the average loss. And it's because it's not always bad people. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's just, these pour spouts come from China and they leak all over the place. You're in a soup.
Yeah, they're sloppy.
You're over pouring. You're, you know, I mean, there's just all kinds of things. You're hooking up the girl or the guy for the extra tip. There's a lot of things that happen that play into that. And 25% annually, that's a massive loss. And if you can eliminate that with a draft cocktail program, you put your most highest volume, you know, cocktail on draft, you're going to make money. You know, draft cocktail, it's not a kitschy thing. This is like your volume mover. You know, when you look at the list of drinks that bartenders hate to make, margaritas on the top of that list, mojitos on the top of that list, you know, Palomas,
Long Island
somewhere.
Yeah. Paloma. Yeah. I can imagine. Yep.
They just get tired of doing the same thing over and over, but those are the most ordered cocktails in these bars. So you might as well put that on there and save the bartender's headache. You're also going to make the bartender more money. Takes 3 seconds to fill a glass with ice and a draft cocktail. That's extra drinks sold. And it's more time for him or her to spend on the super cool drinks that they like to make.
Yeah, very cool. What have we not brought up that you guys think that our audience needs to hear, you know, of kind of where you guys think this is going? And I'll precede that question a little bit. Do you guys think you're ever going to get to that place where people are self-pouring, you know, standard cocktails, you know, these craft cocktails? My wife was just telling me she went out with her girlfriends the other night to a birthday party and they went to this new, you know, whiskey and wine bar down the road, and everybody got their little pay card and got to go pour their own glasses of wine, 1 ounce, 3 ounce, 5 ounces. You know, is that coming to this world? Where
it's already,
what's
here.
That? You're already there.
Already here. So, did you say you live in Austin?
I don't live in Austin. I live in Dallas, but I've been down to Austin quite a bit, and
there's, yeah. You know, Dave and Buster's is experimenting with it in a couple of their locations with their pour walls. I've got some places in Minneapolis. There's a company called iPourIt who does pour wall technology and stuff like that. They've got an
They've been on the podcast before.
Yeah,
they were on the podcast a couple of years ago when they first came out.
We're working with Pour My Beer in Resorts World in Las Vegas has got six of our cocktails on draft there.
Very cool.
It's a self-pour system. So yeah, I mean, it exists. It's happening where legislation allows that, you know, I mean, it's going to take off, you know, and that's going to save labor and all those types of things for those bars.
Which is hard enough to get anyway.
A lot of these major companies are going to start moving towards those iPour systems because it's and they've come up with a way to do it frictionless. So, mm-hmm. you know, because of such the limitations on staffing that we're running into in this industry, you know, it makes sense for these large venues like that to have those pour walls and all where the customer just walks up and does their thing and pours a drink and goes. You know, mm-hmm. so we're seeing the movement in that direction there also. With us and also beer probably combined on those walls.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And the wine thing, it was quite funny because my wife had come home from this birthday party the other night. I had the coolest thing. You got to go check it out. And I just kind of laughed. I said, yeah, I you know, the guy that founded that company was on the podcast a couple of years ago. And she's just like, you're such a jerk. I thought I was bringing you something so cool. But I think that's the way that the world is going. And while it's not great for people that are in the restaurant industry, we've got to solve it. And I think the only way to solve it is to get creative like you guys have. So so if they want to engage, if people want to engage and learn more, you know, you said it earlier, but I want to, you know, reiterate it. Is that your only method of distribution? Are you guys going through the distributors that, you know, that are distributing Anheuser-Busch? If Anheuser-Busch is not on their line card, can they get it anywhere else? Or do they have to kind of open up an account there? Tell me a little bit more.
Anheuser-Busch, we will ship direct. They can go to craftsmanner.com and go through the process there, and we'll ship direct to them if we're not distributed in their
community.
Wherever. Okay. Yeah. But if we are, if we have a contract with the wholesaler that's in their region, they'll have to go through Anheuser-Busch to get it.
Got you. That makes sense. Is there anything else that we missed, guys, that you guys want to make sure, you know, that people hear about not only the story, but how to engage with you guys? You know, what's the next cocktail, I guess, that you guys are going to come up with on your own? Is there anything new that you guys got brewing?
I've been working on the old fashioned.
Yeah. Very cool.
And the old fashioned is such an interesting cocktail because it's regional. Like
yes.
Regionally, they have their way of they want it to be. So it's been this really interesting road to try to discover what I've got to fall somewhere down in the middle is what I've got to kind of do. So
yeah,
there's been a lot of work around that. Was there something else I was messing with? I can't remember.
We've messed with sangria a little bit to try to come up with a solution for, you know, a lot of these like fast casual and chain restaurants that have extra wine where they could pour it into the keg instead of it going mm-hmm. bad by the bottle. And then once they've reached a certain level, then that keg's ready to be used as a sangria keg so that we can eliminate their loss on open bottles. So that's been a concept that we've been kind of working through. Because you put a little brandy in there and then it fortifies it, you know? So
yeah, tightens it up. Very cool. Very cool.
With a 5-liter keg, actually, that you can pick up at a liquor store. You pop the top off of it and you put a liter of we're doing a margarita. So you put a liter of tequila in it and put the top back on it and shake it up. And then it's like a box wine. You know?
it's like a party ball. Like, you know, Coors had those party balls for a backyard party or whatnot.
5-liter Heineken. You know, kegs.
Yep.
So we've got, that's been testing in Nashville, and I think it's going to turn on in Florida to see how that goes for a retail version of what we're doing, essentially, just to see how.
Yeah, I can only imagine this on Broadway down in, I was just in Nashville a couple of weeks back, and it's, that place is a zoo all the time. Wild. You know, it doesn't matter what time of day it is, that place is a zoo. It's worse than Vegas, it feels like, anymore.
Yeah, we call it Nash Vegas.
Yeah. Oh, it's bad. It's bad. The last two times I've been there, you know, the amount of not sorority parties, you know, wedding parties, girls, you know, now it's taken over Vegas for the bachelorette party of the, you know, bachelorette capital of the world. So, absolutely. Well, guys, I'm super excited that you guys are out there. I can't wait to, you know, I guess be able to tease my wife a couple of years from now when she's like, oh, these guys, they had these really cool drinks and they came out of the tap and I've never seen that before. She comes home from a night out with her girlfriends because I do think that this is something that, you know, you guys are hitting on so many of the things. You guys are making it easy for the bartenders. You guys are creating quality product. You guys are giving them the choice of what it is that they need to do. And so I'm excited to hear, you know, to hear the continued success. So thank you guys for being on the show. Thank you guys for sharing a bit of your story.
Yeah, thank you so much for the time. It's exciting to be able to tell the world
you know, about something that we've been working on. And I think there's just such a huge need that people will be excited about it.
Very much so. Very much so. And to our audience, guys, we know that you guys have lots of different choices of what you guys can listen to out there. So we appreciate you guys taking time. I'd love to hear your guys' success stories when you guys pull together the craft standard stuff and you guys put it into your stores. Cause I'd love to hear the success and kind of see where that goes. And so to our audience, guys, we know that you guys love to hear from us. We'd love to hear back from you guys. So, please drop us a note on social media, Twitter and LinkedIn, Facebook as well. While you're online, go subscribe to the newsletter. Once a month, you guys will get an email with all of the podcasts and any of the other articles that we've posted. To Don and William, thank you guys so much. And to our audience, make it a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.